Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning and welcome to Taste Matters with Mitchell Davis. I'm your host, Mitchell Davis, Vice President of the James Beard Foundation. And every Wednesday morning at 11 o'clock, we have a live conversation. Well, hopefully it's a live conversation. Sometimes they're kind of dead, but we try to keep them lively about food. Food, both the food we eat, but more importantly, the role that food plays in our lives, in creating a great culture and in keeping us sane and healthy and wise. And today we have someone for whom we are grateful because of his culinary wisdom, actually his culinary intelligence. Peter Kaminsky has done many things in food, written many great books with great chefs, written his own wonderful, what would we call it, a memoir through pork, Pig Perfect.
A pay on to pigs.
A pay on to pigs. But he's here today to talk about his latest book, which is called Culinary Intelligence, The Art of Eating Healthy and Really Well. Thank you for joining us out here in Bushwick, Peter.
It's great to be with you, Mitchell.
Tell me philosophically, not about the book specifically, but what is culinary intelligence?
It's learning to eat in a way so that you can enjoy food, but not be filling up on stuff that's going to make you really fat and unhealthy.
Okay. So it's a diet book? The book?
I cringe from the word diet book. I've never been on a diet, or I never admitted to myself I was on a diet. There's some dietary advice in it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a food writer. You're a food writer. We have an occupational hazard. From the years that I started writing Underground Gourmet until I got a wake-up call from my doctor, I had put on 45 pounds.
Wow. So Underground Gourmet being one of the reviews, regular weekly reviews in New York Magazine.
Exactly.
People know.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I did a bunch of cookbooks with great chefs. So, I just put on the weight.
Yeah.
And so I went to get my life insurance renewed, and it got unrenewed because I was borderline diabetic. And my doctor said, you need to take off weight. So I did. And actually, the guy who was trying to sell me insurance was also a diabetic. And he said, his advice was, the thing you read all the time, and that's the thing about diet advice.
Uh-huh.
The best advice is the simplest. You can say it a million times, but it's what you got to do. So the first thing he said was, cut out the white stuff. Cut out the processed food. Mm-hmm. The white flour, the sugar, mm-hmm. Cut down on the booze.
Mm-hmm. White and brown, presumably.
Potatoes. Booze, white and brown. And that took off an awful lot of weight. In fact, I was writing Seven Fires with Francis Malman in Argentina at the time.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of red wine, a lot of steak, and a dessert book with Michel Richard. But by following that rule, I took off 20 pounds.
By cutting out the white stuff.
Just by cutting out the white stuff. Moreover, it's 6-7 years later, and I've taken off more weight, and I've kept it off. And a few other things that I think are absolutely critical, and they're very simple,
mm-hmm.
Is if you buy the best ingredients you can afford, and a great fresh turnip, believe it or not, and a great truffle are both very good.
Mm-hmm.
They just have different prices. So you needn't break the bank, but if you buy the very best ingredients you can afford, you are going to be satisfied more quickly with the amount of food you eat. You need to eat less to get satisfaction. And so the third thing, which is so important, is that you need to cook, or at the very least live with someone who does.
Hmm.
Because I think home cooking is really the only way to control your diet. Much as I love restaurants,
mm-hmm.
Eating in restaurants every day is mm-hmm. not going to take off weight. And takeout food is certainly not going to take off weight. And fast food's not going to.
Okay, so three pieces of advice that I think are full of interesting things to talk about. Let's take number two first. Buy the best ingredients. Is it really true? We've had Mary Nessel on this show in the past, who's written a book now that a calorie is a calorie, a calorie, you just have to eating less is the most important thing, and when it comes to maintaining weight and even maintaining health. Why the best thing? What are the best things? How is someone to know that who hasn't had the life that you and I have had?
Okay, well, Marion is a god or a goddess. I just adore Marion and learn a lot from her. What I mean by I'll give you a sort of abstract answer and then a specific one. Mm-hmm. How do we know the best things? We've been eating food for 2 million years. You and I and some of our buddies, but you know, actually, probably our ancestors. Mm-hmm. We have evolved to know when a piece of food looks mm-hmm. great, tastes great, smells great. You know, mm-hmm. go to a supermarket in the winter, to take the obvious example, look at the tomatoes. You don't need to be a gourmet food writer to know they ain't going to have no taste. Mm-hmm. Now, the practical application of this is, you know, I did a test in this book. I took four things that aren't on the usual diet mm-hmm. List, but I certainly still eat them. I took steak, chocolate, beer, and cheese.
Okay.
All right?
Sounds good to me.
Didn't want to give them up.
Uh-huh.
And let me just take the steak example. I've been having talks with, you know, people in the business about grass-fed versus grain-fed. Mm-hmm. I developed a taste for grass-fed while we're writing books in Argentina. And we had heritage producers sent us a number of grass-fed and varying amounts of grain finished mm-hmm. And aged mm-hmm. Beef. And we tasted 14 cuts, and it was the Franks, mm-hmm. Frank Castronovo and Falsinelli from Frankie's and Prime Meats. Mm-hmm. It was Andrew Knowlton. It was my wife. Mm-hmm. And it was just some civilians, you know? So civilians have taste buds that are as elegant as anybody else's.
Of course. They're
very complex. And we tasted all these steaks. The clear winner was an aged, grass-fed ribeye from the Finger Lakes District. Mm. And it was so succulent and so tasteful. Now, you will be satisfied with three slices of that steak. Whereas if I could give you, and that's all the calorie, you know, calories, three slices, three calories. I promise you, if I asked you to eat that side by side with an Outback steak, and you start with that Outback steak, you're going to eat that whole steak, and you're not going to get the same steak experience. You're going to keep eating it, looking for it, but it's not going to satisfy you. So
it's a combination. I mean, we're talking biology and psychology here, really.
But really, we're talking biology. The body knows when it's going to get that great umami, that great protein, that mouthfeel, and it sends off myriad signals to the rest of your body, like, "Yeah, I've had enough. Take a great IPA and a light beer." All right, I'll take the IPA.
Okay.
You're going to have one of those, and it's going to be, you're going to get intense beer-nosity. You know?
Beer-nosity, yes.
You're going to drink a light beer. You're going to get a beer-like experience. You'll get the burp. Mm-hmm. But you're going to keep drinking and drinking that stuff, looking for that beer satisfaction, mm-hmm. and you're never going to get it. Whereas that one or two good IPAs, you're going to be satisfied.
Don't large companies, I'm thinking fast food chains, even large beer producers, don't they have whole research departments to try to put everything in it that you want to make them as appealing and as satisfying, quote unquote? Or I mean, isn't that what they're trying to do with the things that they produce? Or do they fail? Why do they fail?
Well, they fail because you can't fool Mother Nature. Mm-hmm. Like I said, our very sophisticated, very evolved sense of taste. I mean, between what's on your palate and in your nose, I think you can discriminate in an instant. Mm. You know, 10,000 different flavors and aromas, and you can read them. You just can't make that up artificially. You know, you can get, fruit-like flavors and things, but it's not the same as fruit.
Right. Even if they're from all natural ingredients.
So the bottom line is, you know, the companies who put out those kind of products say, well, it's good enough, it's close enough, sounds like it, kind of tastes like it, nobody's complaining, and it's cheap, so.
Hmm. And we're getting fatter and fatter and less healthy and
absolutely
all of that in the process.
Absolutely.
So number two, you said, well, actually, first let me remind people listening that if you have any questions, you can call us when I find the number at 718-497-2128. Or you can send us an email to info@heritageradionetwork.org. Or if you're listening to a podcast, or if you just like to communicate in 140 character soundbites, tweet us at TasteMattersHRN. So the third thing, actually, that you said was that you have to cook. And I think that's very interesting coming from someone who has written how many cookbooks with great chefs in the world? What do chefs do that you don't want to eat, or that you don't want to eat every day, or what has cooking got to contribute to a healthy lifestyle?
Well, it'll give you less anxiety about the money you're spending, but to cook well, not to cook, you know, encyclopedically, or you know, be the Ferran Adrià of Bushwick. To cook well, there are a few basic techniques that are very easy to master. You know, being able to put a crust on meat, which, you know, triggers the very mysterious but very wonderful Maillard reaction, just delights your taste buds in a million different ways. And it's not hard to do once you learn to do it. Infusing ingredients, you know, through braising, again, is just not terribly difficult, and you don't need that much of a repertoire to keep your food interesting and healthy. So it's not hard to learn. Now, I've been a very lucky guy. I say it's like I've gotten to take, you know, clarinet lessons from Benny Goodman. Or guitar lessons from Jimi Hendrix, to be more modern, but. You know, working with these chefs, I've learned a hell of a lot. But I apply it simply in a kitchen. The thing about a restaurant is you're there. The chef's task is to blow your mind right then. And whether that requires a lot of butter, a lot of, reduced complex sauces with caloric stuff in it, whatever it takes to blow your mind, that's what they need to do. They need to do you to get a happy and, you know, wow from that meal. And by no means is that always highly caloric, but dollars to donuts, most of the time you consume something in a restaurant, you're probably eating more calories than you would if you consumed something at home. Do you agree with that?
I certainly agree with that. And some of the tricks, makes it sound like there's some sort of evil undercurrent, but some of the techniques, let's say, that chefs use, I think, they're not, as you said, they're not thinking about what you ate yesterday and today and how you feel. They're thinking about impressing you and cooking in a way to knock your socks off.
There's a chef who I really, 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 really admire, who does everything I like. But I won't mention him because in this one case, it's an counterexample, who takes a vegetable, sous vides it, cooks it in a bag in a water bath at a low temperature, with lard, and infuses it with creaminess, and then places it on a grill and gets it charred and black, and then serves this charred on the outside, creamy, lardy thing in the middle. It's one of the best things I ever ate. But and I applaud him for it, and I go back there to eat that. But to the point of calories, that is something done in a restaurant that, you know, is blow my mind now rather than think right. about my waistline later.
And that as a diner, unsuspecting, you might order thinking, oh, I'm going to have some vegetables.
Yes.
Bathed and soaked in lard.
Yes.
We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. We're talking with Peter Kaminsky about culinary intelligence. You're listening to Taste Matters.
Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years, so it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
You're back with Taste Matters. I'm talking with Peter Kaminsky, author of, most recently, of Culinary Intelligence, The Art of Eating Healthy and Really Well, the not diet book, but a book about how to maintain a healthy lifestyle through informed and intelligent choices about food, let's say. And one of the things I think, Peter, about the book as I was reading it is it seemed almost like a lesson in food culture. When we think of traditionally sophisticated food places, Italy, France, Japan, I think this they might look at this book and go, yeah, so, because what you're explaining a little bit is the basis of having an adult relationship with food, knowing how to cook some good things, knowing how to shop well, knowing how to taste things, and knowing also how to take your own taste preferences, change them sometimes, educate yourself, aspire to other things, but also how to satisfy yourself really in a very adult way. Do you think Americans are lack that, or that we are somehow at a deficit because of our mishmash of American food culture? I mean, what is American food culture besides McDonald's?
Well, you know, I've often said New York City, I believe, is the greatest restaurant town in the world. Not that there aren't better French restaurants in Paris or better Italian restaurants in Rome, I suppose. But it's because we have such varied communities mm-hmm. that I think we have a cultural critical mass that allows us to taste accurate renditions of the whole world's cuisine. So we're in a very special place.
Unencumbered, I would add, by our own tradition. We're open to them.
Yeah.
You know, we want to have them and enjoy them, and we don't think it's weird.
So if you're asking what New York food is, you know, it's dirty water hot dogs. I mean, I don't know what New York food is. Why don't you point me a little bit, where would you like me to go with that?
Sure. Well, I just think that, you know, when I was reading your book, I agree with everything you say about how we ought to eat, but I also think it ought to be second nature. It's funny that you have to write that book. Do you think it's funny you have to write that book? Like, among people, what is the unique thing you want to give people to take away from it?
The funny and the takeaway. What I'd like people to take away is you can eat good food.
And
if you have, even if you shop, if you're in, you know, Livingston, Montana, shopping in the supermarket that has a thing that says rice, and that's the only only one, because there are some staples that anybody can stock up on. You know, some beans, some anchovies, mm-hmm. bacon. I love bacon. It's not on a lot of diets, but if you use bacon as a seasoning mm-hmm. rather than a way to rescue crap, mm-hmm. it's such a wonderful ingredient. So you can buy great ingredients everywhere. How did we come to this pass where we eat such junk, where we have put on 3 billion pounds amongst our populace in the last 15 years? So it's, you know, it's not a surprise. Commercials blast us with soda, you know, and 960-calorie taco salads. Salad should be healthy,
right.
You know, from McDonald's. So, you know, we're really propagandized and titillated to eat bad stuff. And that's how we got here.
But a lot of people like it.
It satisfies their hunger right mm-hmm. then and there.
Mm-hmm.
You put it up against great roast chicken up against the chicken McNugget. Everybody's going to love the great roast chicken. You know, you can't tell me they won't because
mm-hmm.
it's better.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's our commercial culture, our philosophy of big agriculture, our way of recycling petroleum and corn through every aspect
right.
of, you know, the food culture, that gives us lousy choices, prepared lousy, rescued by ingredients that are sweet, that are fatty, that are loaded with salt, just because the prima materia is so lousy.
So you reminded me of one of your acronyms, the FPC.
Flavor per calorie. I think we touched on that earlier. Through great ingredients and through proper cooking, simple cooking. I got to express simple. Through great ingredients and proper cooking, you are going to get what I call more flavor per calorie.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have more flavor per calorie, you're going to be satisfied much more simply. If you don't have more flavor per calorie in your food, natural flavor per calorie, then you're going to have to pile on the sauces, pile on the sugary barbecue sauce, you know, load it down with cheese. How many times have you gone into a so-called the upscale restaurant mm-hmm. in a hotel or something out of town, and every salad's got cheese in it,
yeah.
you know? But it's because it's to rescue tepid, tired ingredients.
Right. So as someone who spent a lot of time with chefs, and now as Americans spend a lot of time watching chefs on TV competing and stuff, can you talk about some things you've learned, I mean, maybe from specific chefs or even just in general, about that you've translated into your sense of culinary intelligence? What has made you a smarter person about all of this stuff?
Yeah, so some of it's just reinforced stuff I guess I knew from childhood. My grandma made great braised brisket.
Mm-hmm.
I learned a lot about braising and simple preparations from Danielle. Actually, I learned it from Danielle Boulud's grandmother. That's who he learned it from, Francine. But you know that the grandmère cuisine, which is grandmother cuisine,
right.
Just I learned a lot of that through Danielle. From Gray Coons, and this is a guy who grew up in Singapore, got great French technique, worked for Freddy Girardet, like number one in the world for 7 years, then was 6 years in Hong Kong. It's a man who has command of three great palates and culinary traditions. I think from Gray, one of the great things I learned is the aromatic spices, mm-hmm. you know, cumin, coriander seed, anise, all these things, turmeric, are, you know, instead of just buying curry powder, There are ways that these are delicate, intricate things that can simply help food. From Fabio Trabocchi, a great Italian chef, I think I learned how just a few herbs can transform a dish.
So each of these things seems to increase flavor per calorie. I mean,
absolutely.
The aromatics of spices, the flavors of herbs.
Absolutely. From Francis Mallmann and Adam Perry Lang, two guys I wrote grill books with, and they're great fire chefs. I really learned how to develop crust on a meat. I learned how almost burning vegetables gives it this elegant taste that's just on the border of bitter that balances so well against the sweetness and creaminess of cooked vegetables.
Which is not the same as overcooking.
No.
Almost burning is different.
Yeah. It's just this side. I mean, there's a tipping point. Thank you, Mr. Gladwell.
If someone listening today, or if they're listening, maybe they're the choir already, but if someone who doesn't listen to the show wanted to start today and lead a more intelligent culinary life, what would you tell them to do? Dinner tonight?
Well, what I tell people to do for dinner is, first thing is, I don't have time, I'm too busy. One answer is, it's lousy crap on TV. You don't have to watch, you know, you can take a half hour out of your life. But roasting a chicken, it's one of the most beautiful things in the world. I use Thomas Keller's roast chicken from Bouchon, where he brines it in honey, bay leaf and salt, and for 6 hours, and then puts it in the oven for 55 minutes at 475. What a chicken. Well, if you're going to make one of those, it takes no longer to make two of them,
right?
You know, and then you've got, you know, food for a week. You know, I would recommend that. This time of year I roast tomatoes, roast them every week, and I freeze them all through the winter. Whenever I'm stuck for something to eat, I defrost those tomatoes, I chop them up, put them in with some anchovies and capers or whatever, right? You know, I make a ragu, and you know, I just have, you know, wonderful meals. Delicata squash, right? Today, right. I'm gonna go buy some delicata squash. I turn it into half, cut it into half moons. I turn on the oven to 350, put it on a baking sheet with a little bit of oil. They will be crunchy, sweet, brown in a half hour, and you don't have to do anything to them.
Well, I'm salivating thinking about dinner tonight. I'm coming to your place.
There you go, buddy.
If you want to hear Peter more, you'll be talking and reading next week at the James Beard Foundation in our Enlightened Eaters series. That's next Wednesday, the 10th at noon. In fact.
Yes.
Yeah, it's free. Come listen.
Please.
Come listen. If you are listening to us next week, before then, you'll be hearing Chef Shin Takagi, who's a great chef from Kanazawa, Japan, who'll be in town. Has one of the great restaurants of all of Japan called Zeniya in the region of Japan, known for seafood and some very unique vegetables, and of course a long tradition of great eating, as most regions of Japan are known. Peter, I think that one of the things reading your book that was just so interesting to me was that it felt like advice on life a little bit. I know we only have a couple of minutes left, but the idea that, you know, we live in a land of limited resources and we ought to choose the best things we can, that, you know, have the experiences, use our time the best way, not just about food, but about other things. Do you apply this sense of intelligence to other aspects of your life, or is your focus so food oriented?
It's not actually. It's, you know, for many years and still occasionally, I was an outdoor writer. I wrote the outdoor fishing and hunting column in the New York Times. So you cannot divorce good food from an overall, you know, perspective on the environment and the ecology and wild things and how we're treating our fisheries. But you know what? That goes hand in hand with eating the best ingredients. You know, the further a vegetable has to travel, the more food, flavor it loses. So, you know, eating locally is a wonderful bumper sticker. It's also better stuff on the table. Mm-hmm. Eating seasonally, you know, not to say that technology can't bring you grapefruits in February.
Right.
But, you know, buying stuff that's mostly available at that time of year from around where you come from and cooking it, it's going to taste so much better. If it's going to taste so much better, you're going to need to adulterate it less, and it'll have less calories.
Words to live by. Coming over for that chicken and that squash tonight. You're listening to Taste Matters with Mitchell Davis. Thank you for joining me. In the meantime, before next Wednesday, eat something better.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.